This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Thursday, July 28th. I'm Angela Denning. The sockeye salmon run returning to the Stikine River near Petersburg and Wrangell was predicted to be good, but it's turning out to be even better than expected. Here's more on that. While the king salmon run for gill netters turned out to be worse than pre-season estimates, the opposite holds true for sockeye. The state-managed sockeye fishery began June 13th. Biologists predicted a strong run, but were cautious for the first few weeks to let more king salmon into the Stikine River. They limited openings to 2 days a week and prohibited fishing near the river's opening. After most of the Stikine kings passed, managers saw that the sockeye run was coming in strong.
Sockeye's looking pretty good this year, at least locally.
Troy Tines is the area management biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, based in Petersburg.
We're fairly certain that we're going to exceed preseason expectations, especially with the Taltan River component of the run. That came in really, really strong.
The state predicted a run size of 223,000 sockeye. That's well above the 10-year average of 172,000.
I'm expecting it to be maybe 250,000 or greater.
That would make it the best sockeye return since the strong runs of 2005 and 2006. The Taltan is a tributary of the Stikine River and a major spawning area for sockeye. A weir project at the Taltan Lake counts sockeyes coming in and shows numbers now that are way above average. Managers were expecting at least a good return because of the counting projects at the Taltan Lake. Besides a weir that counts arriving salmon, there is a weir which counts smolt heading out of the lake to become adult fish elsewhere. There is also an enhancement project at the lake, where eggs are collected, grown at a nearby hatchery, and then released back into the lake as fry. Tina says that the Taltan sockeye historically make up close to half of the overall Stikine run.
And based on our catches this year, both the Canadian catches in river and our gillnet catches in District 8, it certainly appears that the Taltan component of the run is going to be stronger than what was forecasted.
Because numbers were looking so good this season, managers liberalized commercial openings and allowed for 5 days of fishing per week. There were as many as 130 boats fishing in District 6 and 8, more than in recent years. Their harvests are estimated to be about 120,000 fish. Stikine sockeye are shared equally between the U.S. and Canada because the river runs through both countries. It's part of the Pacific Salmon Treaty. Canada has taken about 69,000 sockeye and U.S. fishermen 66,000.
Very good harvest for both countries.
So you're in constant contact with Canada so that everybody's kind of getting about the same amount. That's the goal, 50-50?
The goal is 50-50. I mean, the ultimate goal is to ensure we meet escapement to the river, and then after that, the harvest sharing is 50-50.
The size of the individual sockeye has been about average this year. Gill netters have been getting about $1.35 a pound from local processors. Now that it's the tail end of the sockeye season, local managers will soon be turning their attention to the pink salmon fishery, the largest salmon fishery in Southeast. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning. And the Wrangell-Petersburg area will transition towards pink salmon-directed management on August 1st. Sitkins, on the front lines of substance abuse treatment, received good news. The state's Division of Health and Social Services awarded Sitka Counseling and Prevention Services a grant of $150,000 per year for up to 4 years to address prescription, opioid, and heroin abuse in Sitka. Lloyd Platson, who works with Sitka Counseling, says the funding, called the Strategic Prevention Framework Partnerships for Success Grant, will be used to gather much-needed qualitative information. He estimates that 24 Sitkins have been referred for inpatient and outpatient treatment facilities just in the past year.
One of the things that this grant will do is help us actually set up a system for gathering the data that we need to establish a need, and then also what are some of the trends and what's the scope and the depth of the issue here in Sitka. There's no hard data that really addresses that right now.
The grant will be shared with members of the HOPE Coalition next year to develop programs. The HOPE Coalition, which stands for Healthy Organizations, People, and Environments, formed last year and includes youth advocates, Sitka Community Hospital, SEARCH, the school district, Sitka Police Department, and others. Platson hopes this grant will inspire more organizations and individuals to join the coalition and using the data to develop evidence-based strategies for dealing with drug abuse.
The federal government has a database of programs that have been proven to make an impact on the different substances and things such as that. And so that'll be one of the requirements is looking at, what are evidence-based programs that we could implement in our community.
Platson called abuse of painkilling drugs an epidemic, adding that 80% of the world's opioid supply is consumed by Americans, despite making only 5% of the world's population. He's passionate about addressing substance abuse, motivated by his own experiences as a teen.
I abused heavily in terms of alcohol. And so I almost died from that. And I think that was a triggering point where I almost died from alcohol poisoning. And I finally had to sit down and look at my life and say, what is it that I want to be about and what do I want to do with my life? Since that time, probably my second year in college, I got involved with, peer counseling, and it just made sense to me. And so whatever we can do to enhance our personal lives and the community life, that's what I decided I wanted to be about in my life.
Platson also applied for a federal drug-free communities grant. Those winners will be announced in September. The Criminal Justice Reform Bill recently signed into law is intended to save money and reduce the state's prison population by eliminating the factors that contribute to recidivism, or the revolving door of offenders repeatedly returning to prison. The measure includes a small tweak to current law that allows nonviolent and low-risk offenders to quickly get back on their feet. KTO's Matt Miller has more on that from Juneau.
Tucked inside the mammoth bill were a few small sections that add an SEJ, or suspended entry of judgment, as a form of deferred prosecution. An SEJ will likely be imposed for those first offenders who have a high likelihood of rehabilitation and reintegration into society.
That has to be negotiated, plea agreement. That can only be done with the agreement of the prosecution.
That's Quinlan Steiner, head of the Public Defender's Office and a member of the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission, the panel that developed a series of recommendations that became the foundation of Senate Bill 91. After a guilty plea, an offender who agrees to an SEJ may serve a little jail time, if at all, and be ordered to undergo treatment, pay restitution and fines, and spend time on probation instead of a longer prison sentence. If they successfully follow through, then it could mean a brand new start with a clean slate. The case would be dismissed.
Because the conviction would have never entered, never formally entered, and then the plea withdrawn.
The concept of deferred prosecution is not new. Former Alaska Supreme Court Justice Alexander Brenner says they revised Alaska's criminal code in the 1980s. New statutes modeled after other laws allowed for a suspended imposition of sentence, or SIS. It's similar to the new SEJ, but only the sentence is suspended. The former defendant would still have a conviction of record. An SIS is usually imposed in cases in which youthful, first-time offenders are charged with a low-level property crime, and it's not available for driving under the influence and some crimes against another person, like domestic violence.
There were individual cases where there were complaints about leniency, but overall I think that judges statewide were pretty good about reserving those kinds of sentences for truly deserving people, where in many, many cases the prosecution wouldn't oppose.
SISs are not uncommon. According to figures provided by the Alaska court system, as many as 4% of felony offenders and 2% of those charged with misdemeanors each year may receive an SIS. That may not sound like much, but that's between 700 and 1,000 people each year who are not serving their time in a prison cell. And with costs up to $158 a day for each inmate, that could be as much as $40 million a year that is not being spent for incarcerating low-level or low-risk offenders. Because there's still a conviction of record, the case would still show up in court view, the court system's online database. Tom Wagner, a Juneau attorney who works on contract as a public defender for city misdemeanor cases, says that was a problem for former offenders really trying to make an effort to get back on their feet.
When they're vetting candidates for a job, rather than paying to get a rap sheet from the Department of Public Safety, which would say conviction set aside, employers would go to Courtview and see that the person had a theft conviction and decide not to hire them.
Justice Brenner also served on the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission, which determined that publicizing records for those with an SIS could negatively affect their ability to obtain housing, assistance, or a good job. Unemployment and lack of stable housing have been identified as major factors contributing to recidivism or offenders quickly reoffending and returning to prison. During a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing in March, North Pole Senator John Coghill explained that online court records will be removed for those who complete treatment programs, serve their time, and satisfy conditions of the SEJ, or suspended entry of judgment.
It's going to be on Courtview while it's active. That was something that the Office of Human Rights wanted also. So just like many other things, once that judgment is satisfied, then you pull the shade down.
Coghill was one of the legislature's representatives to the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission and the lawmaker who shepherded Senate Bill 91 through the legislative process last session. The bill grew to 123 pages before it was signed into law by Governor Bill Walker July 15th. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Haines's biggest event of the year kicks off today. The Southeast Alaska State Fair draws thousands of people to enjoy diverse musical acts, delicious food, and classic fair staples like a carousel and Ferris wheel. KHNS's Emily Files has more on what the weekend holds for Haines.
There are some performers who experience the fair once and keep coming back. The Lack Family Band from Northern California is in that category.
We love Haines. Oh my gosh.
The people,
our friends here. It's like we call it our third home.
The family part of the Lack Family Band isn't a metaphor. Paula and Scott are the mom and dad. Paula's on keyboard, Scott's on the mic. Their three daughters, Deborah, Sarah, and Chloe, all play instruments and sing.
Those words were a lie, 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 lie. Those words.
They first performed at the fair 4 years ago, pretty much by accident. They were on their way to Fairbanks when that gig got canceled. The fair was happening, so they showed up and found the event coordinator.
And followed her around with her clipboard and said, would you like to have any other bands at the fair? And so she was like, I don't know, you know. And so she finally gave us a spot, and then we wound up all playing at the fair on all the side stages, like for 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
And so since then, we've been coming back for 4 years.
This year, they've earned a spot on the main stage Friday night.
We have amazing entertainment this year.
Jessica Edwards is the woman in charge. She says a lot of people are excited about this year's main headliner, singer-songwriter Martin Sexton.
You might have seen one down in Minnesota. Or maybe down by the sea in Sarasota.
There are also some more eclectic performers, like a one-man circus act from Hawaii.
Our entertainment coordinator saw him in Hawaii performing on the street and thought, oh my gosh, this guy would be perfect for the fair. And he approached him, and he didn't think it would go anywhere. He gave him a card, and this gentleman, Noah Moore, was in touch and said, I want to come. And so here he is.
The fair has also maintained its tradition of craft exhibits. People from around Southeast send in everything from quilts to canned goods to native arts, and the exhibits are judged and displayed during the fair.
It's like Christmas for me.
Dina Stout is the exhibit manager.
It's just seeing people's creativity and their joy in doing what they're doing. It's wonderful for me. I love it.
Stout says the overall number of exhibits has dwindled this year. But there are some categories, like wearable art, that are bucking that trend. Stout points out one wearable art piece called Coho Antoinette from a Ketchikan artist.
And it is a dress that's made of a blue tarp, along with fishing line and fishing netting and buoys and a fish.
The elaborate costume made from recycled materials will get its turn on the catwalk during the wearable art show Friday evening. And let's not forget the food. Fair Director Edwards says interest from vendors has increased, so there will be about 20 food booths this year. That's good news for the Lack Family Band. They say they keep coming back to Haines because of the people, but the food might have something to do with it, too.
The Chilcat Bakery, they have buttermilk donuts, and they are bomb. Like, they are so good.
Yeah, Sarah Jace is going to be there. I'm going to get all her bagels.
Sarah Jace will be there.
Yeah. I love her bagels.
Love for Sarah Jace bagels. Yes. I don't know what it is.
And their ice cream.
Food, music, merry-go-round, wearable art. You can find it all at the Southeast Alaska State Fair. The fun starts Thursday and continues through Sunday afternoon. More information about tickets and schedule at seakfair.org. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
And I'm Angela Denning. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. Thanks for listening.